Good morning. You guys got a special treat coming for you today. You don't have to hear me preach. Congratulations. We have a special guest speaker today. Jen Krause is here from Buffalo to share with us her testimony. I heard her give this testimony in Buffalo at the Wesleyan Church there and some good friends over there. And man, I thought it was powerful. And I asked her if she'd come over here and share it with us. And so she is here. She's written a book that I highly recommend. It's called Proof God Hears Your Prayers. It is available on Amazon. Go check it out. Go buy it. She also has a new podcast called Godspeed Wyoming.
Godspeed Wyoming. Yeah.
Godspeed Wyoming. So go check that out. Go search that podcast. I feel like you will be blessed by it as well as her testimony today. So will you please put your hands together and welcome Jen Krause?
Awesome. Wonderful. Thank you all for allowing me to be here today. Oh, is that me? All right, so yeah, I'm from Buffalo. I live a little outside of Buffalo, and I attend Summit Wesleyan Church. So many of you know our pastor, Pastor William Dunlap. He started his faith journey here, so I was talking to him about coming over here, and he had such wonderful things to say about you all. So I'm just so happy to be here and just so thankful. Today, Pastor Wilson asked me to speak about my two favorite things, so I'm so excited to do that. Just God and my testimony, as well as leadership, kind of my leadership journey. I just love being able to share my God-given testimony. God has created so many wonderful miracles in my life. So I'm so happy to share that with you today. And then just the road through leadership, what I would have never imagined that God would have put me in so many leadership roles. I never would have seen myself in that. So today we'll be talking a little bit about that. But again, I just want to talk a little bit about how my leadership journey starts, and it starts when I was 5 years old. Now, don't get too worried. I know we have 30 minutes. I'm going to wrap this up. It won't be too long, but, you know, as children, a lot of things that we start with and what we think about as adults really started with when we were maybe an experience when we were a child. And, you know, mine started, again, my first day of kindergarten. I was 5 years old, and I was always such a social butterfly and just wanting to meet new kids and being around people and getting off kind of our family farm and being able to start my new day of school. And so I remember getting off the bus and going onto the playground, and I was so excited to see all these kids. But what I noticed the most was this amazing smell that was kind of in the air. And I asked this little girl next to me, and I said, "What's that smell?" And she said, "Well, that's the smell of blueberry muffins." And I thought, well, I had never had a blueberry muffin before, and it smelled amazing. So I trip-trapped my way down. She said the cafeteria was down in the basement, so I made my way down, and I was stopped by a lady, and she said, "Well, let me look at your name on this list." So she went down the list, and she said, "Well, I'm sorry, you have a pink ticket with us, so that means that you don't qualify for breakfast. You only qualify for lunch here at the school. So I just need you to go back upstairs and just wait in the playground." And I was a little confused, but I said, "Okay." So I went to turn around, and as I turned around, there was two little boys behind me, and they began to mock me and make fun of me and said, "Well, there's the poor girl. That's the poor girl. She can't even have breakfast here." And I was just devastated. I was so embarrassed, and I just made myself way up those stairs, and I went behind the school. I couldn't even go back to the playground, and I was behind the school, and I just began to pray, and I began to cry, and I just said, "God, you know, what does poor mean? What does qualified mean? Like, why can't I have a blueberry muffin? Why is this happening to me?" And it was just so hurtful. Then the bell rang, and I knew that it was time to go in. And God has always given me this inner spunk, like this inner resiliency. I don't know where it comes from, but then I just decided, you know, I'm not going to let that little boy see me cry. And I just began to pray, and I just began to say, "God, I just pray that someday I'll have as many blueberry muffins as I want. I know you can make it happen, God. I don't know why it's happening, not happening for me right now, but I believe that someday that will happen for me." So I just pulled myself up, wiped my tears, and I went into that school and just really worked through those years. And then when I was 16 years old, my life would change forever as I was in a severe car accident. As most 16-year-olds are, I was driving way too fast and lost control of my car. And I hit a guardrail head on. And when I hit that guardrail, I wasn't wearing my seatbelt. The car hit the guardrail head on, the doors expanded, and my car began to flip. And I was ejected out of my car, and I was found in the middle of a hayfield about 10 feet away from my car, laying on my stomach in a Superman position. And I was sent flight for life. I'm from a small town in Southern Colorado to a large trauma hospital in Colorado Springs, for Colorado, where I would find myself fighting for my life. I was put on a large ventilator. I had broke my back, I had broke my neck, I had broke my rib cage, which went into my lungs, which punctured my lungs, which was not allowing me to breathe. And I would find myself in and out of consciousness. And I had this large breathing tube. My eyes were really swollen, and I was on this rotating bed. They kind of strap you down, and I just rotate from one side of the room to the other, one side of the room to the other. And I remember my family coming in and just crying and praying for me, and I just knew that this was not good. And in one of those moments, you know, I remember seeing what I figured it was a doctor, long white coat with the lady next to him and my parents. And as I rotated to one side, I heard the doctor say, "We recommend that you stop her life support. We don't think that she's gonna make it." And then I rotated to the other side and I couldn't hear anything else. And when I rotated back, they were gone. And I found myself in this big hospital room, rotating back and forth, not able to speak, not able to tell anyone, "I'm alive, I'm here, don't give up on me." And so growing up, my mom, you know, taught us, you know, to pray and said, "If you don't feel like anyone can hear you, God can hear you. God can hear all of your prayers, he can hear all of your hurt." And in that moment, I was so scared. I was a 16-year-old kid and just not ready to die in any way. So I just prayed. I just prayed that God would save my life. And, you know, sometimes we negotiate back and forth with God with these prayers. We say, I knew something was different was happening to me with my legs and my body, but I didn't know exactly at that time that I was paralyzed. So I just said, "God, no matter what I have to face moving forward, just please save my life and I will just move forward with no matter what I have to face." And I just remember rotating back and forth and just praying that prayer. And within days of that prayer, my lungs began to heal. And within days of that prayer, my life support was pulled out and I began to breathe on my own. And I remember when this tall trauma doctor, the same doctor that talked to my parents, I remember him coming in again and him just looking at me and saying, "I can't explain this. Like, lungs do not heal like this. Like, you should not be alive. You are truly a miracle." And when you're 16 years old and you hear that, you know, I was just overwhelmed. It was like, God, it just answered this amazing prayer for me. Like, he had saved my life for a purpose, and I felt so overwhelmed with gratitude and just thankful, just knowing that God was so real and that he had heard me. He had truly, truly heard me. And so after about a month and a half and being in ICU, breathing again, it was time for me to be able to transition into the next level of care. But that night before I transitioned, I remember looking and the nurse was washing my legs and kind of washing my body, and I'm thinking, I can't feel that. So I asked her, I said, "You know, I can't feel that." And she said, "Nobody's told you, have they?" And, you know, I had great parents, and I just feel like, you know, how do you tell your 16-year-old daughter that she'll never walk again? Like, I'm sure that's a very hard conversation to have, especially when you're just hoping that she will just survive. So she took the time and she paused and she said, "Tell me when you stop feeling." So she put her finger right here in my chin And she brought it all the way down, and I stopped feeling at my chest level. And she said, it's what you're what we call an incomplete spinal cord T5 spinal cord injury. So when I broke my back, part of my spinal cord was severed by that bone. And so she said, we don't know how much feeling you're going to get back after physical rehabilitation or what will come back, but we do know that you'll never walk again. And whew, that was just like a blow. Like, okay, I will never walk again. What does that look like? And so many things started going through my 16-year-old mind, like, okay, I'll never ride a horse. I'll never dance. And then it felt bigger, like, will I ever get married? Who would ever want to marry somebody that's in a wheelchair? Will I ever have kids? Like, what will my life look like? And it was just, I couldn't even picture like what looking my body or what I would look like in a wheelchair. And so I asked her, I said, well, can I see a mirror? And just the way she looked at me, and I thought, oh, this isn't good, because she had this kind of horrified look on her face. And so I even insisted for a mirror more after that. So she took out a mirror. When I saw myself, you know, I was a month and a half later, I'm still very swollen, purple. I had a big, you know, incision scar from here to here, and I was bald. They had shaved my head. I couldn't believe in those surgeries. They had to shave my head, and I was just devastated. I felt like I looked like a monster, just a complete monster, and it was just devastating to me. And then I was transferred to that acute rehabilitation part of the hospital where I sat in my wheelchair for the first time. And so here I am looking like this scary monster with no hair and sitting in a wheelchair. And I was just devastated. I just couldn't believe. And then physical rehabilitation got harder and harder when it takes you 30 minutes to get your pants on and you're trying to take a shower and it's not working for you. And I was trying to push my chair and I was very weak and just not strong. And all of it was just so hard. And I would lay there at night and I would just cry and cry and cry in my bed. And I couldn't understand, like, why would God save me but not heal all of me? And he had the power. Like, we know he has the ability, but why would he save my life but only heal half of me? Like, what would be the purpose of being in a wheelchair for the rest of my life? And I fell into a pretty deep depression at that time. You know, I would find myself at night that instead of praying that God would save my life, I would just pray that God would take my life. Like, I just felt like I was not strong enough to be in that wheelchair, to be doing what he was asking me to do in that moment. So I remember even at time to time, I would just hold my breath. I just hold my breath and say, okay, don't want to wake up in the morning. Then I fall asleep and there was the sun. And I would be waking up in the morning and the nurses would say, okay, Jen, it's time to get up. But during that very trying time, you know, God always puts amazing people and puts people in our life in the time that we need them. And so one evening, a new nurse came into my room, and her name was Jennifer as well. And she was a new grad, and being a new nursing grad, she was like ready to conquer the world. And she came in and she really noticed that I was hurting. She really noticed that I would cry myself asleep at night. And I wasn't just another patient to her, another number that she had to take care of. And so on her breaks, she started spending time with me, and she started bringing in, you know, popcorn and movies and magazines and just talking to me. And she didn't talk to me about being in a spinal cord injury or my rehabilitation. She just talked to me about things I liked and what I enjoyed and those type of things. And it was just, I felt normal. She just helped me feel so normal. And then she started to encourage me and tell me about other people that lived their lives with disabilities or lived their lives in a wheelchair, and how other people were able to be successful. And she just, wow, it's amazing how when one person could take the time to be present and talk to someone and help them be hopeful, how you can really change someone's life. And this nurse, Jennifer, really did that for me. So I began to do better in my physical rehabilitation. I began to not pray that God would take my life, and my hair started to grow in, which helped a lot for me. So at that age, and I turned 17 in the hospital, and I was going into my senior year, and I was getting ready to be discharged, and then Jen came and said, "What are you going to do now?" And I thought, well, senior year of high school, I mean, I'm going to go back to school. I didn't really have many future plans. And she said, "Well, what about college? You know, what does college look like for you?" And I, oh, no way. Like, I had a wonderful D average. I was a great D average student. And so I had the gift of gab. I was at school for like the social part, never for the academic part. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I might have to use my brain. What does that look like? There's so many kind of scary things. And she just said, you know, and then from a financial standpoint, my family didn't have, you know, the ability to financially pay, like, what does college cost? I couldn't even imagine what college would cost. But she really took the time to explain to me resources and tutoring resources and things that could be out there. So I'm happy to say, after I was discharged from my physical rehabilitation, I then graduated high school. And then 4 years later, I did graduate from university with a bachelor's degree in social work. So I decided to go into social work because at the hospital, I had a great social worker and I really wanted to help other people with disabilities. And so I did my internship at St. Mary Corwin Hospital in Pueblo, Colorado. And then they hired me as a medical social worker. So I will never forget that first day of work. So first day of things seemed to be a theme for me. First day of school, now first day of work. So I'm a first day of work. And by then, you know, I'm 22 years old. I graduated. I was living independently. I was able to take care of myself completely. I had a car adapted for me. I was driving. And so here I am, living independently, driving, making $12 an hour. I just thought I'd made it. Like, I had officially made it in life. And so I'm driving, and as I'm driving up to the hospital in the employee parking lot, the employee parking is right, and the handicap parking for employee parking is right next to the cafeteria. So many of you might already think in your mind where this is going, but I pull in to, and I park, and I open my door, and I smell the most amazing smell of blueberry muffins. It was just amazing. And you know, a lot of times when we, you know, smells bring you back, and for me, I just began to cry. It was just such a moment for me that it was like God came down and talked to me, that it was a confirmation and a reminder of when I was young, you know, blueberry muffins, I had prayed that someday I'd be able to have as many blueberry muffins. And not only was I able to have as many blueberry muffins as I wanted at that time, God had brought me through such a tragedy to here, living independently, driving, have a job. And it was just so much confirmation that He hears. And so when He said my book is called Proof God Hears Your Prayers, He might not always answer them in the time that we want Him answered, but He hears us. And I just, in that moment, I just knew that He had heard me. So I had got out of my car so fast, and I rolled myself up to that cafeteria. And, you know, when I was in kindergarten, those blueberry muffins looked about that big. And in the cafeteria there, the blueberry muffins were like that big. And so it was very, very exciting. Not only did I buy one, I bought two. One that I had to eat, and the other one I just kind of put on my desk for a little bit so I could just, you know, feel empowered and then, you know, smell it a little bit. So it was just really great that I had that. But, you know, after that moment, I didn't know that God was going to start to open all these leadership doors for me. I had never seen myself as a leader in any way. And, you know, now we're over 20 years later, but, you know, and I've been in many leadership roles. It started for me at St. Mary Corwin. There was a great person in administration who said, "You are like a natural born leader. And I thought to myself, really? And so, but they said to be a leader or a director at the hospital, you have to have a master's degree. So I went back to school, got an MBA. I have a master's in business administration with the emphasis in healthcare management. And by 27 years old, I was running there. I was a director of post-acute care there at St. Mary Corwin. I had over 103 employees. And God had just really blessed me. I just really leaned on him for just discernment and be able to help guide. And then by 30, I had met a gentleman who was starting up a company for physical disabilities, and it was a physical rehabilitation company, and he needed CEOs. And I'm thinking, I had never been a CEO. I've been a director, but not a CEO. But he hired me and placed me in as a COO, chief operating officer, and trained me to be a CEO. And I worked for him for almost 10 years at different hospitals as a hospital CEO. And while I was running one of his hospitals in Arizona, I met this amazing man that is from the great town of Les, Wyoming. And he was working in Arizona as well, and he was just an amazing human being. And now my husband, Dustin Krause, and we were married. And then a year later after we were married, you know that being a spinal cord injury, you're very high risk for pregnancy, and there's a lot of risk, so it's not always recommended. But we just prayed, and we were like, God, if it's God's will, we already know now that God can make amazing things happen. And if it's his will, I'll get pregnant. And I did, and I gave natural birth to my amazing son, Waylon Krause. And yes, my husband is a big Waylon Jennings fan, so Waylon Krause is named after Waylon Jennings. But and after Waylon is just a fighter like his mama, you know, he was 6 weeks premature, and they told us we were flighted down to Colorado, and he was gonna be in the hospital for quite a while, but Waylon was in that NICU for 7 days, and then he was ready to come home. So Waylon did really, really well, and we were happy. And now Waylon's 10. Waylon and Dustin are sitting over there, and they travel with me as I speak. So Waylon is the biggest accomplishment in my life. But after we had Waylon, it was just time, you know, in hospital administration. You know, you're on call 24 hours a day, and it just felt really, really big, and I wanted to be a mom. I had this beautiful blessing of God had blessed me with, and so Dustin, being from Wyoming, he was like, oh, I really feel like the best place to raise a child in Wyoming, and no offense to anybody who's from Les, but I did not want to move back to Les, Wyoming. So I was like, okay, I will go to Wyoming, but, you know, Colorado girl needs to be kind of close to the mountains. What does that look like? And so I applied for a job at Sheridan College and kind of changed careers, went into the nonprofit field. And so currently, 8 years later, I'm the executive director of the Sheridan College Foundation. And during that time, within these 8 years, about halfway, the president there said, hey, do you mind being the vice president of students as well? So I do dual roles at Sheridan College as the executive director of the foundation and vice president of students. And you know, as I was doing these large leadership roles, I was having this conversation with my husband, and I said, am I doing enough for God? Like, I just feel like I should always be in ministry. And God just keeps putting me in these big leadership roles. And then Dustin looked at me like, hello. He said, leadership is your ministry. And I started to think to myself, you know, I touch and I'm able to communicate with so many people that I probably wouldn't be able to communicate at a church. Some of them are faith-based, some of them are not. And so then I just thought to myself, well, if I'm gonna be a representative of Christ in leadership, what does Christ-like leadership look like? And for me, you know, Christ-like leadership looks like a lot of grace. And so when I come to work every day, I try to show as much grace to my employees as possible. Grace and respect, and then love. Like, God is love. God calls us to love. So just, you know, my staff, I just love them. Like, I truly just love doing what I do and love being with my team. And then the third one is just listening. Again, you will hear throughout my testimony that God hears us. And I feel like Christ-like leadership would look like a lot of just engaged listening. So I try to bring that into my leadership as well. And I feel like it's really helped me to be successful in my leadership roles. I was able to switch from healthcare to nonprofit and jump in lots of different roles. And people say, well, how do you do that? And how do you do that successfully? And I feel like it's truly through my Christ-like focused, and God just gives me wisdom and discernment. And I've been really blessed, but within this season of COVID, and I know many of you probably felt this way, you know, being in a leadership role was hard. There was a lot of transition, I know, throughout Wyoming, but, you know, in education, there were a lot of budget cuts, and there was, you know, how do you service students remotely, and what does that look like? And for me, being kind of new in my role, just trying to learn and do things, and then just helping our community, I got asked to be involved in a lot of different community things. And before I knew it, my bucket was overflowing. Like, I was taking on two jobs. I was involved in a lot of community. I was on boards. I was, wow, going at a moment where, you know, I was working, you know, several weeks in a row, not seeing my family. And when I come home, I'm just tapped. I was just tapped. And I got to a point where I just started to question, you know, is leadership really where I need to be? Do I need to be doing this? Like, is this what God's really calling me to do? And I began to question, because I felt so burnt out. Like, I was completely burnt out. And then I went to church, and Pastor William at Summit Church, he put up on the screen this, you know, big thing that was a book, and it said Elimination of Hurry. And I thought to myself, is that a thing? Like, could you really eliminate hurry? And it just sounded amazing. And so the author is John Mark Comer. And so I really took a deep dive into that book and listened to it and bought it. And John Mark Comer's this major church pastor that really got to an overwhelming point. Like, I was feeling so much of what he was saying was resonating with me. And then he just stopped. And he really implemented a lot of just these time with God and a lot of these different things. And so he talks a little bit about minimalism, and I told my boys, I want to be a minimalist. And they're like, hold on, you're going way too far. So we're not there yet. But one thing that he did talk a little bit about was just simplicity and solitude. And that just sounded just amazing to me. Like just, I never have a really, you know, silence and solitude is what he talked about. And I don't have a lot of silent time or time on my own. You know, I feel like the only time I have that is when I'm asleep, because it's busy at work, busy at home, busy on the weekends. And so I decided, he had talked about if you could just spend 10 minutes of your time. And so I thought, okay, and the time that I could spend 10 minutes of my time where I'm only alone is really in my car, like when I'm driving. So I get ready in the morning, I get in my car, I sit in my car, and I set my alarm. I said, okay, 10 minutes of my time, what does that look like? So I sat there, and then I said, okay, said a few prayers, now what? Because I'm a very structured person. So then I decided this 10 minutes of my time will look a little bit more structured. So I wrote down a declaration, things I want to work on, a small prayer list, just people that I just feel, not huge prayer list, but those that I just feel passionately about that time. And then I just journal a few sentences of gratitude. And I actually brought that with me today. This is my journal. And, you know, as I wrap up here, I just wanted to share with you my declaration. I want to encourage many of you, you know, this time of silence and solitude, I have to feel like it's been one of the best leadership skills that I have implemented. I think there's a lot of books out there on leadership, and but there's no real books on leadership about self-care or how, as leaders, do we take care of ourselves. And I feel like that was so important, and this book really provided that for me. And I kind of call this my morning pregame as I'm getting started in my leadership day. What does that look like? So I start with this, and I start with, I will walk slowly enough to experience God's goodness fully, and I will love people deeply. I will help me, God, to be present in each moment and listen to all conversations. Help me to choose what's important and know what is not. And I will focus on speaking truth and bringing the light to others. And just a key words in there that's just so important to me as I was writing this, but just walking slowly enough to experience God's goodness fully. You know, I have this beautiful drive to work, whether I go to the campus in Buffalo or in Sheridan. And a lot of people were like, oh, wow, did you see this changing of the trees? And I stopped and I thought, no, I didn't notice the colors and the changing of the trees. Did you see the sunrise? And no, I didn't see the colors in the sunrise. And it just began to help me realize I need to stop and start enjoying these things. So when I start with that, it helps me to look around and say, Jen, just stop. Just loving people deeply, just being very mindful of my tone. You know, I feel like I do a really great job of listening, engaging, and loving people. But then when I get home, I'm like, whoo, I'm tapped. And a lot of times my tone isn't as great with my family, or I'm not as engaged listener with my family. So when it says truly loving people deeply, that's what I focus on. And just being present in the moment, listening to conversations, putting my cell phone away, and just truly listening. If you're too busy, how can you truly listen? And just being able to say no, and just say yes to what's important. Again, I could be in an event and almost every week and every weekend, but I really started to think, you know, what is family and faith, you know, and lead with that. I have other commitments, other boards that, you know, I'm on right now, but just knowing what's important and what's not and really leaning into that. And then speaking truth. You know, I am a Christ follower. God has done so many great things for me, and I'm not going to be embarrassed of that. And sometimes now transitioning into education, you have to be sometimes a little careful with that. And I just thought, you know what, if God puts that in my heart, and I'm not going to be embarrassed of who I am and what I believe. Or with this new podcast, you know, I was in the doing this new podcast, and they were like, well, is it a faith-based podcast or not? Because you could really have more listeners, you know, if you're not like, oh, this is faith-based, you're just sharing your encouraging story or other encouraging stories. And after I did my first recording, it was all about God and God's miracles. And of course, it's a faith-based podcast. And if people want to listen, great. And if they don't, that's okay. Like, God has brought me to speak truth and just focusing on that. And then finally, just being the light to others. God, I feel like, just saved my life, and just saved my life to just be a light and share this testimony. For so many times I was like, why? And now my anniversary of my spinal cord injury was June 12th of 1994. That was recently, just 30 years. So 30 years later, I'm realizing, why? Why was I in this car accident? Why did God leave me in a wheelchair? It's to share my testimony. You know, a lot of speakers, they bring props. Well, I take my own prop with me. This is my prop. And so when I'm around, not only am I on a speaking stage, but I'm at the grocery store or I'm somewhere and somebody says, you know, what happened to you? And you're still smiling, like, what happened to you? And I said, well, great. Let me tell you a story. You didn't have a time. And so it's just a great entryway for being able to share my story and just my love for God and all the great miracles. So now I get it. Now I know why I'm permanently in a wheelchair. And just over time, God answers those questions for us. But as I leave here with you today, I just want to leave with this scripture because it's just something that has resonated with me. But John 1:5 says, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overtaken it. And that just hit me so greatly when I read that, because I just feel like the devil came and just darkness came in that time through that car accident, or maybe those difficult times for me in leadership. But there's this light that God just keeps building up and building up, and I just feel like no darkness, whether there's so much darkness right now, whether it's in the media or out there. And I just feel like God has called me to continuously share this testimony and share my light with others. So thank you all. I hope someone out there found this helpful and just join me in sharing God's light. So let's pray. God, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for this church, God. Thank you for the people that are here today. May you be working through them, God. May this testimony just bring a light and a light of encouragement to somebody. Maybe who is not feeling as strong in this moment, or maybe who can needs to spend some more time with you, God. Just let these words be your words, God, that you're just using me as a tool for you, God, that you're just speaking light into somebody today, God. Just help us to be strong, just great speakers of your word and just great representatives, and may people just see you in us every day as we move forward, God. Again, all glory and honor to you, God. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.